Ron. Well, I appreciate this opportunity. One thing, I have a lot of notes here because I don't want to forget what I was going to say. If you give your testimony in church, they tell you you have 3 minutes. And then when you take the women out of the room, they give you 30 minutes. There's got to be a lesson there somewhere. But I am Jack Chenigan. I am 68, almost 69 years old. You know what that means, don't you? It means I'm old, especially in Berean ages. But what it means is when the pastor at the end of the sermon says, "Would you please stand for the benediction?" You wonder, is that a command or is that just a suggestion? But I've been in Berean now for 5 years, which is unbelievable. It's March 5 years ago, and I can still remember the first Sunday I was here. We try to make ourselves invisible. We sat near the back, so no one will notice us. And this guy comes up to us, and he introduced himself to us, and his name was Terry. And he was an okay guy. We talked a little bit, and then we had a time of, you greet your neighbor kind of thing. And this old guy comes hobbling up to us, a bald-headed guy, and he introduced himself as George. And George looked at me first, and he says, "You look like an ex-football player." And I said, "Yeah, I was a long time ago." And I thought to myself, "Oh, this is great. I love this church. I still have it. I still look like I'm a football player." But then he looked at my wife, Linda, and he said to her, he said, "You look like a good-looking Baptist woman." And I thought to myself, "What is this?" And Linda thought, "I love this place. I want to come back to this church." And we've been here ever since. But it's but it's been a good journey, and I absolutely love this church. I worked 43 years as a podiatrist, and I retired about a year ago. And I love my work, but I got to say I love retirement a lot more. Been married 44 years now, almost 44 years, to the most beautiful woman in the world. And going back to George again, and when George gave his testimony, he said something like this. He said, "When you marry a beautiful woman, she becomes more beautiful every year you're married." And I was wondering at the time why he was talking about my wife during his testimony. But, I like to say it a little bit different than George said. I don't know, I probably messed your thing up, George, but the way I like to say it is, the more you love the Lord, the more beautiful your wife becomes. Amen. And that's the only way it can be true. And that's been true in my life. We have 4 grown children between the age of about 35, and I think the oldest is 42 now. And all 4 are married to perfect people for them. They're all involved in their local church ministries. We have 2 kids over at Solid Rock Bible Church in Plymouth, where my son is a youth pastor, and he's doing well now. I've got a daughter over at Highland Park Baptist Church, and she's extremely involved in ministry over there. And I've got a daughter in Indiana, and she goes to a Baptist church there. So we are very, very, very fortunate. And between those 4 kids and their spouses, we have 12 grandkids, 10 which live within 3 miles of our house. And we're fortunate. And my job now as a retired person is basically twofold. One is to continue to spoil my wife. And I must be doing okay now because she recently bought a plaque that she has on her dresser in her bedroom, and it says, "I love us." And I got to tell you, there's times in our marriage that she would never bought that sign. But I love that sign right now. And my second job, besides spoiling my wife, is trying to impact 12 grandkids for the Lord. And I'm going to be talking about that after my testimony a little bit. But we have 2 signs in our house that my daughter made. The first one is in our hallway when you first walk into our house. And what it says is, "Grandma and Grandpa's house, where cousins go to become best friends." And they are over all the time, and I just love that. The second one is my study, and it says, "The only thing better than having you as our dad is our children having you as their grandfather." And I appreciate that, too. When you listen to things like that, it almost sounds like I'm bragging or the world would say I'm blessed. And the answer is yes and yes to both of those things. I am totally blessed, but not because of any of that stuff. I just want to read one short passage in Psalm 32. David says it way better than I do. He said, "Blessed is the one whose transgression is forgiven, whose sin is covered. Blessed is the man against whom the Lord counts no iniquity, in whose spirit there's no deceit. You know, he uses three different words for sin there. He uses transgression, he uses sin, he uses iniquity. And MacArthur translates that into rebellion, failure, and perversion. But then he goes on in verse 5, it says, he personalizes, he says, I acknowledge my sin to you. And then he goes on, you know, we got a God that forgives us no matter what we did. But then you go in verse 8, he not only forgives us, this is a passage I love here, he says, I will instruct you and teach you in the way you should go. I will counsel you with my eye upon you. I mean, who would want a better God than the guy? He forgives us and then tells us how to do it right after that. But I'm supposed to give my testimony how the whole thing started. So I have a question for you guys first. How many of you guys in this room grew up in a strong Christian Bible-believing home? How many guys? Just raise your hands if you like that. It's about half. That's actually more than I thought. I did not grow up in that kind of home. I grew up in Detroit. That doesn't mean I'm not a Christian because I grew up in Detroit. But I grew up in Detroit back when they had four professional teams here. I actually saw the Lions win their championship in 1957. You know, it's a funny story. I went to my uncle's house because my uncle lived in Livonia, of all places, and that's where the wealthy people used to live. And he had a color TV set. And what that meant, instead of being black and white, it was green and white. But I remember I watched that. I was 7 years old, and I remember that's the last opportunity I had to see that. But to show you how things are different now, my senior year, our senior trip wasn't to the Bahamas. We went to Brighton, Michigan to the Jack and Jill Ranch. And I was thrilled to go there. But that's how things have changed since that time, okay? I grew up in a home with two brothers and a sister and parents who loved us. They did the best job they knew how. Considering they didn't have the Lord in their lives, I think they did a pretty good job. Both my brothers and the sister have professed Jesus Christ as their Lord and Savior. So we've done pretty good. But if you were to describe my home, there'd be one word to describe it, and that's an ethnic home. I am Armenian. Any name that ends in I-A-N, you know, Janigian, Hagopian, Kevorkian, Chalakian, those are Armenian names. And I'm going to give you a little lesson on what it means to be Armenian. You know, Armenia is a country. It used to be part of Russia back in the day. It borders Turkey. It has their own language. And I used to speak it fluently back when I had to because my grandparents don't speak it fluently. But there's one word that describes everyone in this room. It's a word that stands for if you are not Armenian. And the word is Odar, O-D-A-R, Odar. And my folks always refer to Odars. And what it actually means is exactly what it sounds like. Not quite as good. And you know, and I grew up hearing that all the time. There's Armenians, and then there's everybody else in the world, basically. But there's an interesting history behind being Armenian. Back in 301 AD, Armenia was the first state that declared Christianity as the state religion. Also in the early 1900s, I think it was about 1915 to 1920, they went through a genocide where 2 million Armenians were massacred. And what I was always taught, not only in my home, but also in an Armenian church I went to, is never forget and never forgive. How's that for a Christian message from a church? And the other thing about Armenia is I always heard that Mount Ararat, the landing place of Noah's Ark, was in Armenia. It's actually in neighboring Turkey. But you could see it from Armenia, so they claimed it to be their own, all right? But again, you know, a very, very, very strong Armenian heritage, and that was absolutely everything. The most important thing that was drilled into us over and over and over and over again. Back in my dating years, actually, it was more like dating days because I really didn't date that much. I knew I could get the family one car for the first date, but the girl was not Armenian. I'd be walking on the second date. Because my parents are trying to protect us. My two brothers and I, because they want us to marry Armenian. A standing joke in our family between Linda and I is I grew up in a strong Armenian non-Christian home, where she grew up in a strong Christian non-Armenian home. And somehow we got together, and I'll describe how we got together in a few seconds. But one thing my parents always instilled in me from as early on as I can remember, they said, whatever you do in life, be the best you can be. And it didn't matter whether it was school or sports, or whatever, they always strive to be the best. And that was actually good advice. So my job at an early age is to figure out what that thing was that I could be the best at. And I actually discovered it when I was probably in the eighth, ninth grade. And for me, it was the world of sports, specifically football. And not because I was a great athlete by any means, but I was big. I made a mistake of telling George my nickname back in high school. And George, what was my nickname?
Moose.
Moose. Everybody called me Moose because I was big. You know, I weighed about 230 pounds back then. And that was big for back in the 60s. That was pretty big, you know. But I really put everything I had. My entire life was football. And during the season, I was a happy camper. When the season was over, I had nothing. Basically, I just worked at it and worked at it. And by the time I became a senior, I started getting scholarship offers. I won all kinds of crazy awards. I had one game in my senior year. I sacked a quarterback 8 times in one game. But it was easy for me because I was big, all right? So the scholarships started coming from different schools, but they weren't the major universities. They weren't the big football programs. It was like the Albion, the Elmas, the Michigan States, schools like that. I did get an offer from Michigan State that if I made the team, and I ended up going to Wayne State, but I was still delusional at that point. I still thought I had a career in football for some reason, and the first practice ended that dream for me. It was like, in college, they hit back. In high school, they didn't hit back, you know, and I said, this is crazy. The first game I played in at Wayne State, the first play, I made the tackle. And 5 minutes later, I was on the way to the hospital because the bones that were supposed to be inside of my thumb were now on the outside. And first play, you know, and it didn't end there. It was injury after injury, and I lasted a little over a year. And I finally realized, I said, I need to find something else I can be the best at because it's not football. You know, the delusion ended pretty quick. I had to figure out what else I could do with my life. And I had an uncle who was a podiatrist out here in Plymouth, and I worked with him a little bit to see what it was like. And I said, you know, it sounded appealing to me. I could do surgery, but I could still have a normal life. And he got me into medical school. I switched from phys ed to pre-med, and then I went off to University of Chicago Medical School. And the fast forward to my last year, you look forward to the last year of medical school because your last year is when you really get to see what it's like. You work with doctors who are successful. You get to hang out with them. You eat with their family. You do surgery with them. You get to experience what you're going to have. And I was looking forward to that for like 6 years at that point, you know, because I wanted to be them until I actually met them. Because every doctor I talked to, they were all successful. They all made a lot of money, but more than anything else, you know, they made money, but they always wanted more money. You know, they had the enormous houses. I mean, I grew up in a 900 square foot house. They had enormous houses. They wanted bigger houses. They drove sports cars. They wanted better cars. They were all married, but they acted as if they were married to somebody else. And so that period of my life, that year is probably the hardest year I've ever experienced in my life because I was working hard to become something that I thought would give me joy and contentment in my life, and I could see it wasn't going to do that. And I didn't know what I was, you know, and I was just, you know, and another passage that kind of describes how I was is Proverbs chapter 30, verses 1 through 3. And it says, I am weary, O God, I'm worn out. And it then talks about being stupid because I didn't have the, you know, the wisdom of God, you know, and that's how I felt. I mean, I saw no purpose in life. I saw my future being like these guys. But I knew there had to be something else. And, you know, and there's scripture talks about how no man seeks after God. And that describes me. I was the no man. I knew there had to be something better, but I knew it couldn't be God. Because I had no interest. When I was in school in Chicago, I used to have to walk past Moody Church. And you're talking, I walk about a mile. And you know what the weather's like in Chicago in wintertime. I used to walk out of my way so I wouldn't listen to the music coming out of that church. That's what I felt about church. I had no interest whatsoever. And I ran a thing about that. That's where my son went to college, went to Moody Bible Institute. You know, but I had no interest. I wasn't seeking after God whatsoever. But in the fall of 1974, that was my last year of school, I discovered something that solved all the issues in my life. and it definitely wasn't Christianity. What it was in the parade section of a magazine. It was an advertisement. You could purchase this plaque, and it was probably $9 instead of $19 back then. And I didn't want to purchase it because I didn't want to have to wait for it to come. So I just cut it out. I taped it to my refrigerator, and I said, starting tomorrow, this is my life right here. And you know what it said? You're going to see how deep I am when you hear what it said. It said, today is the first day of the rest of your life. You know, talk about arrogance. I thought I had all the answers to life. And I said, starting tomorrow morning, I'm going to do things right. I'm going to get life in order and have the contentment I so desperately deserve. So I went to bed that night excited about the next day. I got up and I don't remember what happened exactly. I probably touched it for good luck on the way out the door. When I got home that night, I looked at that the little message on the refrigerator, and I looked back at my day. It wasn't a whole lot different than the day before that. But I wasn't discouraged. I said, well, tomorrow I'm going to start doing it right. And this literally went on for 2 to 3 months. Every day I looked at that sign. Every day I was all charged up to get and do things right. And every day it was the same thing. It was just discouraging. And I was just like, ah. And during that time, something else interesting happened. For a short period of time, I was dating this girl. It wasn't Linda. But she claimed, professed to be a Christian. And I think I was her project. She was trying to convert me. And you know what I told her after about, we dated probably about 3 weeks. I said, you know something? I don't mind. I like looking at you. I can't stand listening to you. I am done. And I literally left her in a restaurant and walked out. That's where I was spiritually in my life. I just had no interest whatsoever like that. But shortly after that, I met my wife-to-be Linda as a patient in the doctor's office I was working at. And obviously, I was attracted to her. But there's something different about her. She'd come in for surgery and she'd be happy. She always had this joy about her, and she has something in her life that I was seeking, but I didn't know how to get it. You know, it just made no sense to me how this girl could always be so happy. Well, here's where our stories kind of diverge a little bit. I would say I asked her out 2 or 3 times and she turned me down. She would say I asked her 6 or 7 times and she turned me down. But I was asking her to the wrong places, basically. You know, she was grew up in a strong Christian home, and I didn't know that. But I actually got turned down by her mother one time. I called one time to talk to her, and her mom says, well, Linda's not home right now. She's at Bible study. And I thought to myself, are you kidding? I mean, this was just after this other girl. I said, this can't be. What in the world is going on? You know, like this. But now I was more intrigued. So I finally got her to go out with me one time. It was my last week in school. It was my graduation dinner dance to medical school. And the only way I could get her to go out with me, I promised her we didn't have to drink and I wouldn't make her dance. I said, I just want to talk to you. We'll spend the night talking. Well, after this thing was over, we went down to Lake Michigan, sat on a bench, and we literally talked until 5 o'clock in the morning. And she shared her life with me. It wasn't like this other girl who preached at me. She was just sharing what she had in her life. It was obviously centered on Jesus Christ. And I wasn't interested in that part, but I liked the end result. You know, she had joy in her life that I've never, ever seen before. And she was just so content and happy with her life. And I can remember exactly what I said to her. I said, you know, that stuff just isn't that important to me. And her response was priceless. She said, it is everything to me. So I wasn't stupid. I said, well, maybe I should look into this. I had no intention whatsoever in looking into it. But that's what I told her because I was, and you know, that night was, I think, the first time, in fact, I know it was the first time God answered my prayer because I asked God's permission to kiss her. And I didn't write that. But you know, that night, I was more concerned about her dad killing me when I got to her house, but he trusted her, you know. So, you know, and that was a Friday night. We went out Saturday. She took me to church on Sunday. We went out Monday. We went out Tuesday. And then I left to do my residency program here in Michigan. And we called and we wrote and things like that. And about 2 months later, I came back to visit. And we had a long discussion, and we both agreed that this was not going to work because we are on different paths in life. You know, her life was centered around Jesus Christ. My life was centered around everything but that. But I was still interested. I said to her, tell me what I got to do. You know, whatever it is, I'm interested, you know. And she could have told me, well, say a prayer. And I would have done it and we would have gotten married. But she didn't say that. She said, what you need to do is find a good church. She gave me a Living Bible, New Testament. She said, read the New Testament. And she gave me a book by C.S. Lewis, Mere Christianity. She said, do those three things. And I said, I'm going to do those three things, but I'm not going to call her right unless I believe it to be true. And fast forward to 2 or 3 months later, it wasn't happening for me. You know, I read the New Testament. I read parts of it twice. I read the book, which was something I've never read anything like that before. It was each page was like a day's study for me. I was visiting different churches, definitely not with Baptist in its name, but I visited different churches. And, you know, and I didn't believe it. I believed it to be true, but what did it have to do with me? I had no clue whatsoever. And I was back to the distraught stage in life. I said, I just don't know what's going to happen in my life. And this was in September of 1974 on a Friday night. I was home alone. I turned on the TV. And who's on TV but Billy Graham? And I said, well, I'll listen to this guy. As I say, you know, I heard about him. I never listened to him. And I listened to him and I said, I'm the guy he's talking about. I'm the sinner who needs a Savior. And Jesus Christ is the sinner who came to save me from my sin. And it was kind of like, it's kind of weird. You read everything about it, but until you understand, it means nothing. And I actually prayed in front of a TV set. And I asked Jesus to forgive me for my sins. You know, and the only way I knew how, and I was extremely emotional at the time. And I called two people afterwards. First person I called is my mom. And I remember what she said. She said, well, you know, that's good. You know, that's okay, but be careful. Too much of that is not good for you. But that's all she knew. You know, she was looking out for me again. And then I called Linda, and she was ecstatic for me, but I could sense she wasn't ecstatic for us because she had moved on in her life, and you know we had no commitment. What we dated for a whole week, guys, you know. So we did right. We called once in a while and just check up on each other. And about 4 months later, her dad passed away, and I came back to pay respects, and we got back together after that. And our next date, we eloped and got married. And that was 7 months later. I would not advise that for any of your kids. Probably, I didn't know her middle name when David got married. We knew nothing about each other like that, you know. But, you know, we've been married for 44 years, and I am truly, truly blessed. But I don't want to leave you just with that. I got one other thing I want to share with you. Actually, there's two things I want to share with you. One is Psalm 90, verse 12 and verse 14. If you want to write anything down, write Psalm 90, verse 12 and 14 down. And the other thing I want you to remember is being Armenian is pretty cool, actually. And but you guys are going to always be Odar, so you have no chance. So don't get too excited about that. But Psalm 90, 12 says, teach me to number my days so that I may get a heart of wisdom. So teach me to number, our days so we can get a heart of wisdom. So in other words, make use of the time you got. You know, I mean, we have one opportunity to live today, and don't blow it. You know, when I was working, the last probably, and I didn't always do it right, but probably the last 10 years of my career, when you're working and you're your own boss, and you got a person sitting in a chair that can't escape because you put that chair up, you can say anything you want to them. And what I used to, here's the routine I went. All the time, all day long. If you get a teenager in there, I say, hey, so how, you know, you ask them how they're doing, and say, what are your plans? And they would say, well, I'm going to go to school. And I said, college? Yeah, I'm going to go to college. I said, what happens after college? And they would say, well, you know, I'll get a job. I said, that's great. I said, what happens after you get a job? And then they talk about getting married and having a family. I said, but what happens after that? And you keep taking them down the path of their life. And, you know, and some people would actually say to me, I'm going to get old like you, you know, which is okay. But then I said, but what happens after you get old like me? And they said, well, I'm going to die. I said, but what happens after you die? You know, and I got two answers basically from everybody. Half the people will say, never thought of that. So then you tell them what the Bible teaches. It's, you know, they can't escape, especially if their foot's anesthetized. You can say anything you want. But the other half would say, I'm going to go to heaven. But then you ask, well, why? And half the people had the right answer, and half it was based on how they're living their lives. But it's an easy way to talk to anybody. So teach, you know, the verses, teach us the number of our days. Use the opportunities you had. And I had three daughters, and my three daughters were, we took walks all the time. And we'd always talk about, we talk about guys all the time. And I used to say, okay, what are you looking for in a guy? What is desirable in a man? What does the Bible teach about that? So use those opportunities. And I always took them to Proverbs 19:22. And New American Standard says it the way I like it. It says, what is desirable in a man is his kindness. So I'd ask them, I said, well, how do you know they're kind? You know? And they'd say things like, well, how they treat me. I said, no, I said, I fooled your mom. I said, that's not, look how they treat their mom. That's how you can tell, you know? So you put words like that in their mind. And my youngest daughter, when she met her husband-to-be, if she came back from a date, I said, hey, tell me about this Jason guy. You know what she said? She said, he is kind. And you know, she said, like I'm sitting now with like tears in my eyes. But she knew that was a guy because he was so kind. You know, so opportunities you have with your kids, with your grandkids, take advantage of it. I had four nephews, still have four nephews, and they were, when they were teenagers, we met once a week, and we did a Bible study together. But, you know, if you feed them, they'll come. We'd throw 20 hamburgers on the grill, you know, and I'm sitting there watching them eating 20 hamburgers with four guys, you know, and I kept making them smaller and smaller because I didn't mean, you know, like that. But then we had a Bible study. You go through, you know, Ephesians, Colossians, and we did this for years. You know, and these four guys are all doing great right now. I got a phone call about 2 o'clock this afternoon from an older nephew. And he's one of these guys, he's in his mid-40s, my oldest brother's son. And he believes he's a Christian, and I know he's not. And he said, can you come over now? And I said, I can't, but I'm going over there tonight. And his life is an absolute mess. But, you know, take advantage of opportunities, you know. No matter what those opportunities are, you know. I got 12 grandkids right now. My favorite thing to do with the grandkids, and, you know, if you guys have young kids or grandkids, I would advise this highly. I got this pack of my verse cards. We call it verse walks. And what we do is I go on Saturday morning, pick them up at 7 o'clock in the morning. We're going to start again this Saturday. You have to have decent weather to pull that off, you know. And we'd go for a walk. I'd carry some kind of ball, football or baseball with me, and anywhere from 4 grandkids to a dozen grandkids. Not a dozen, you know, 6 or 8 grandkids. In the first half of the walk, we walk about a half a mile, and we talk. We talk about life. We talk about, but I always have memorized the scripture, and these are verse cards. And I probably have 50 of these verse cards. And their job, they had to memorize them. You know, that was the assignment for the following week, to memorize the verse. But we talk about it all the way, you know. I'll give you a couple examples. This is Philippians 2:3. Do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but with humility in mind, consider each other more important than yourself. And I used to ask these guys, who's the most important person in this group? And they all say, everyone but me. I says, but you got to do it. It's one thing to know it. You got to do it. So we talk about that for a half hour every Saturday morning. Next verse, Colossians 3:12, describes a Christian. And so as those who have been chosen of God, put on a heart of compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. I said, guys, this is what you're supposed to look like. As Christians, you're supposed to look like this. And we evaluate their lives and just talk about it, you know. I'll give you another example. The other day I saw a cartoon. And I was with my grandkids, and I saw this cartoon. It's a picture of a car hanging over a cliff. And there's an embarrassed husband behind the wheel, and there's an angry wife next to him. And the caption said, the husband said, there's got to be a lesson here somewhere. And I said to my grandkids, I said, so what's the lesson? What is this lesson that's being taught here? So, you know, use things like that in your lives. And they didn't know what the lesson was. I said, you know, this guy took the wrong road. And right away, an 8-year-old granddaughter said to me, she said, Grandpa, that's Matthew 7:13-14. It's about the wide gate and the narrow gate. And they remember that from 2 years ago. You know, so use opportunities you had. One last thing. On Tuesday morning, I get to drive 2 granddaughters to school every Tuesday morning. And it's a 20-minute drive. And I could listen to the music all the way there and go out of my mind. Or I could use that time to share whatever I'm learning. Sometimes I learn in Sunday school from Terry Bixler. Sometimes I, you know, from the sermons. Sometimes whatever I'm reading in my quiet time. But use that time. And And that it was the 21st. I remember that because it was a Tuesday, the 21st of May. And I did, a couple of days before that, I read Proverbs talking about what is desirable in man is his kindness. So we talked about that all the way to school. And we got to the parking lot at Plymouth Christian, and they didn't want to get out of the car. We're still talking about it. And 2 days later, my daughter calls me up. She said, Dad, what did you guys talk about on Tuesday? I said, what do you mean? She said, did you talk about marriage? I said, yeah, we got around the marriage. I shared what we were talking. And she said, Dad, there's 6 and 8. And my response to my daughter was, yeah, there's 6 and 8, but we're going to have this conversation again and again and again. You know, use the whatever the Lord's teaching you, next generation, pass it on to them. You know, I told you guys the two things to remember, one is being Armenian, and I mentioned a psalm. What was the verse? Psalm 90, verse 12 and 14. It says, teach us to number our days that we would get a heart of wisdom. But the second part of that verse is verse 14. I'm going to end with this. And it says, satisfy us in the morning with your steadfast love so that we may rejoice and be glad all our days. And that's the only way to do it. But again, the message to you guys today is, don't remember my story. It's like anybody else's story. But use the opportunities that God has given you to impact people there in your lives, specifically your family. Kids, grandkids, things like that. So any questions? Any want to learn anything more about Armenia or anything like that? Anything going on? That's it. Thank you.